Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
The one person I've always said that I never wanted to meet in a dark alley is leaving the sport of tennis, and he's joining us now, Paolo Lorenzi. I'm going to miss you desperately. When I you on the court was everything I always wanted to be as a fan, so I'm so sorry to see you go, but congratulations on this next step of your career.
Thanks a lot. I'm really happy to be here. I'm so grateful. It's fantastic. A lot of time I was speaking with Noah, with you, and it's a dream to be in this podcast. You know, I didn't know that I have to retire to be in the podcast, but it's nice to be here.
I think, you know, we're going to go into so many aspects of Paolo Lorenzi's career, but I think what sums it up perfectly is me asking him for a behind the racket story. So get this, you know, this guy's been on tour for just under 100 years, And he reads my stories on, he's very kind. He reads some of my stories on Behind the Racket. He's like, oh my God, they're so heartbreaking and they're inspirational. And for me, I just love tennis. I don't have nothing negative to say. I have an incredible journey. Look at what I've done. I love tennis and I'm here. I'm like, I fought it for a little while. I'm just like, no, that's Mr. Lorenzi. That's like, that's what you get out of tennis and in his head. And the few times I got to share a court with him, you know, you feel like you're kind of a part of tennis history. You know, it's so weird. I mean, like what he's seen, the changing of the guards, and I'm sure, you know, seeing a lot of the next gen come up, it must have been an incredible experience. So to have you here today is amazing. And to get to know you over the past few years is great as well. But no, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, I think, but it's true. What did you say? Every time that I heard your story, I feel that the tennis players has a lot of history. They pass this and this. It's happened many, many bad things to a lot of them, and then the good things to become a tennis player. For me, I was younger. I saw my brother playing tennis, and I just loving it. They told me that when I was young, I always said that I want to be a professional tennis player. Of course, everyone is dreaming to be number one in the world, but like you know, it's not so easy. And yeah, a lot of people ask me, why are you playing until this age? And I say, I'm just love to wake up and playing tennis. It's I was so lucky that for 40 years of my life, my work was my passion. I think then nobody, not a lot of people can be like this. And yeah, that was for me. Everyone, for part of my life, I was like unconscious. Because if you think about my career, I was 27 years old. My best ranking was 160 in the world. And I was still thinking, okay, a little bit of 50. And if I think now about this, really, it's amazing. But maybe it's the passion for tennis that it bring me to play until 39 years old. And and now I stop just for my body. If it was for me, I was playing until 60.
So I've always really wanted to ask you this, how you are so well loved off of the court, but your intensity and ferocity on the court is completely different. How are you able to, once you get between the lines, kind of click on to the point where it looks like you are truly going to harm the other person across the net from you?
I think that, okay, for me, like I say, stay in a tournament was my dream. So when I saw the other guy, I was watching them practicing. I was always looking at them and I was thinking, this is a good player. He's playing so good. So I was really happy to stay there with them. But one time that I'm going court, I knew that I was doing everything that I can do to win that match. Of course, not stole the ball, all these things. But I knew that this is my chance to beat some guys that for me, they were better.
I think when I watched Lorenzi play, there was always like he bordered that line of respect and ferocity at the same time. It was always like, I'm going to kill you, but I'm going to make sure you feel okay after it. You know, it was like always that. So for like when you get off the court with him, you can't hate him. You know, so we played 2 weeks in a row. And the first week I played, I was like, I feel good, but I just won like 4 points today. Like what just like, I felt good. I was hitting the ball well and I came off the court and it was like 3-1. I was like, what in the world just happened? So I think for Paolo, it's always like, I'm here. I'm going to fight. My hat is going to be attached to my head and will never come off until I beat you and we go on our way. And then everything's happy. Then you see a smile and then the Italian accent and we move on. But for you, you know, with the initial reaction of retirement, what's the first thought? You know, what is that first thing that comes into your head that says, hey, I don't have to wake up tomorrow to practice, maybe as tough. I'm sure you're going to still practice, but you know, I don't have to do the same things. What are you feeling right now?
The feeling is really strange. First of all, I was thinking to thank my wife and my family, because I think that my journey was really, really long. And also for them, it was not easy to stay with me. And for the other part, I'm a little bit, of course, sad, because I know that I will miss the tour. I will miss wake up in the morning and practice. But I think also it's the right time, because I'm not missing too much going to practice, because really in the last 3-4 months, my body was dead. Maybe I was running too much. And the other part, I think, is the pandemic. The pandemic is killing me. Like you say, I love to do 100%. But also I love to have people around me and to play without people like now in New York. Mm-hmm. I think it's terrible for a tennis player.
So I kind of want to go back to this idea of the joy of the sport. There's so much discussion, Paolo, about kind of the mental health component that goes into it, right? And Noah has talked about it and been pretty open about his struggle of finding that joy competing when, you know, most tournaments you're going to lose at some point during the week and the struggles that go along with that. If you're starting to work with a young player, Paolo, say you're starting to work with Noah, for example, what would you say to a younger player about how to find the joy in the struggles that you experience in tennis?
I think about this, I was lucky that also my parents helped me, because I started really young to have a mental coach. I was starting when I was 16 years old. He's still with me. So if you think about this 25 years ago, this was something completely new. So I think he helped me really a lot. Like you say, it's not easy. I'm telling you, I never slept when I lose a match. So I think this is impossible for every tennis player, because you are thinking, okay, maybe that time I have to do 7 volume, maybe now I have to wait, I have to play the back and cross, I have to play long, down the line. So I think for everyone is the same. But like if I have to, I don't know, to stay with Noah in this moment, I would say, of course, you will have the mental struggle. It's not easy. I think the key is to give the 100% on court or when you practice. And then I think you have to be with some professional about the mental part, because I think it's really important.
I think kind of going into this on the darker side of things, and I know we want to smile and everything, but I feel like everything has to flash. You know, you retire, your whole career kind of goes through your head at the same time. you know, what would you possibly have done different throughout your career? Some changes that you think would have helped you or not at all? You know, this was your pathway. I kind of want to hear about your insights there.
Of course, when you finish your career, it's like, when you finish a tennis match, you're thinking, okay, why in this time I made this? Why in this time I made the other choice? I'm telling you, yesterday my wife said, okay, you have to stop about thinking about this because now you made it. At the end, I think you have to know that if you arrive at, I don't know, in my case, top 50, you have to know that everything experience that you had is bringing you there. So if you think like this, then you can think positive about everything. But then, of course, I changed my new coach and my fitness coach on 27. And with them in 10 years, I became top 50. I won an ATP. I was top 100. So you are thinking, of course, maybe if I was going with them when I was 19, maybe my best ranking was better and all these things. But maybe I knew them when I was too young, and then I will not have the same results. So I think you have to enjoy and think positive on this.
It's such an interesting concept because you mentioned it. You did have success later in your career, and that doesn't happen very often when you've been playing 8 or 9 years and then have that next level. What are the in those moments, what are the most impactful times of that stretch, you know, going into the top 100 for the first time at 27, becoming the oldest first-time ATP champion? What are the ones that kind of stick out for you at this point?
I think that for one part, I enjoy more than a lot of people because a lot of guys, they go there when they are 20. So it's like a normal thing to be play an ATP, to have everything for them, all the people, the fan. And for me, after that I made, I don't know, I started when I was 16 and a half and I went to Cairo to play a satellite alone. So if you think about that, after 10 years of challenger and future, I start to be on the main draw in an ATP. I was happy to find, I don't know, the Sprite in the fridge or the Coca-Cola because you know, in the challenge, you don't have all of these things. So I think that for one part, I was really lucky because, like I said before, I really enjoyed to stay that week with that kind of player. I was watching them for 10 years at TV, and now I was with them. So for me, it's like sometimes
do,
like
a dream. Do you think that helped with the longevity of your career? Because I speak to a lot of players that, let's say, you know, have been making quarter semis of ATP tournaments for, let's say, 5-6 years now. They lose that feeling. They're like, what's the next step? And if I don't get to the next step, I feel like I'm not going anywhere. But for you, it took, you know, 9-10 years to get there. Then you're there. Do you think that you're like, I just want to be here for as long as possible now? You know, I want to enjoy this. Do you think that's why you stayed on tour for so long? Do you think if you didn't have that breakthrough to top 100 that you wouldn't have stayed for another 10 years or so? Is that possible?
No, I think that you're right. Every time that I was in a main draw in ATP, I was happy. For me, was really a big result, was a goal. I was trying to play as much tournament as I can. So I think this for me was really important. That was, I say, for sure, one guy that is 20 and is already made 21, is already made one quarter, one semi, is different. But for me, that I was fighting, I was going, I don't know, 1 week in South America, 1 week in Italy, 1 week in the States to play one challenge, to stay there and play an ATP. It was the best fun of my life. So that's why maybe I was playing until now. And like I said, the bigger problem for me and the only thing that I didn't like at the end of my career was to play without people. I was supposed to play every time. I would say, okay, I will stop at the end of 2020. And then I would like to continue until I can.
A quick sidetrack question, something we spoke about on our last podcast is, you know, US Open took away fans for qualifying this year, but there is more prize money in qualifying than there has ever been. What would you prefer? Would you prefer 20% off your prize money with fans or 10% or whatever the case may be? Or, you know, the extra prize money?
By my side. But of course, you have to think also about with player that they maybe they were not top 50 or top 100 during his career. For me, it was much better to have 20% less, but have all the people that they can come watch. I don't know, this year I qualified in Miami, and I had my best friend here in Sarasota. I had my wife, and they cannot come to watch me on the main draw because that court was without people. Mm-hmm. So if you ask me, I prefer to stay 20% less. But of course, you have to think also about the year that maybe their 220 best ranking was 180, and for them, 20% is a lot of money.
All right, so this question is from Josh Mycelis, Paolo. Josh Mycelis, who does a lot of work with the ATP Challenger Tour, who said, he texted me when I said that I had a big guest, and he's like, I know it's Paolo. I know it's Paolo, so you have to ask him this. You are 3 wins away, Paolo, from being the all-time match wins leader in Challenger history. 3. You and I both know that you could pop into a Challenger in 2 weeks and you could do that. Maybe 2 Challengers, right? But we all know you could do that. Why, when you're that close to a record, are you going to stop and hang up the rackets?
Wait, do you know that you are in that record? I guess that's the first question.
No. I know because okay. we bet one pizza.
That is correct.
Before the pandemic, and he told me, okay, you cannot pass the record in this year. And I was already 5-6 matches. I said, come on, just for sure, I will do only 2020. Trust me, I will do it. And then with the pandemic, we didn't play a lot. So at the end, you only want pizza. So I have to pay this pizza, of course. But that's, of course, I was thinking maybe to break the record. Also, that we have a lot of challenger in Italy or here in the States. So it was a good chance. But for the other part, I had New York in my heart. I made a lot of first round in Grand Slam. Was 13th first round, and I won my first match in New York. I made one time fourth round, 2 times third round. Every time my brother, my wife, a lot of friends were coming to New York. So I think that the best place to finish my career. And I think Ruben Ramirez Dago is the first one. He can be happy for this. I always send message to him.
So, you know, I just have to ask, because there's, I don't know if Mike can see it. You know, he's busy at the Open right now, so we don't want to distract him too much. But looking at you right now, there's like such a peace in you. You look so peaceful. You look like you're happy with how everything went. And, you know, you say give 100% all the time, but what else is there? Is there enjoying moments off the court at tournaments? Is it making as many friends as what is it to get you to a point to look as happy and, of course, as good looking as you are?
I think that you are right. for the good looking, I would like, but I'm trying to do my best about this. But like you say, I was trying to do 100% in every match. Every time that I was going to court, I was professional. I was going to sleep early. I was eating the good food. I was really everything that I was trying is to be professional as much long as I can and to be the best that I can be. Like I said before, it's impossible to be everyone number one in the world. So 2 months ago, I told to my wife, to my friend, that it would be that I will finish my career in New York. And they didn't trust me. I'm telling you, my wife didn't come to New York because she was thinking, now for sure you will continue to play. It's impossible that you stop here. And then when after the match, I spoke with ATP, I said, okay, this is my last match. I was so happy. Everyone also yesterday didn't believe that I was stopping. But I knew that it's the right time. I knew that I cannot do nothing else. So that's why maybe I'm right now in peace, or maybe because I still don't understand that I cannot go and play a tournament next week.
All right. So I want to put you in the role of commissioner of tennis, if we will, just that hypothetical commissioner of tennis. Noah and I, obviously, on this podcast, we talk a lot about at the challenger level and how to improve things for players at the challenger level. I'm going to put this very broadly, Paolo. If you had to do and had the opportunity to change 3 things for players at the challenger level or the ITF level, what do you think those most important 3 things might be?
That's a really good question, because we have one big problem, that the people at that level, they cannot live with tennis. But this is not the only problem. I think that sometimes the people or who is around that tournament doesn't see you like a professional tennis player. And that's, I think it's another big problem. So for sure, what do you need? That, of course, the prize money, because it's bad to say, but you cannot take $500 and if you lose first round and bring the coach or the physio, you have to pay the flights and the people doesn't know that. And then I think also a lot with the facilities. It's not the same thing. When you go to an ATP, you have balls, you have courts, you have all these things that made you practice and made you a better player. I think, of course, in the Challenger right now, we are too much behind all these things that made a tennis player a professional tennis player.
I think, and this is going off of that question as well, and you've been on tour for so long, so I think a lot of people would automatically assume that you are a tennis traditionalist. You know, you like the long five sets, you like it going on, you love all of that. Do you think, you know, in this point of time with the new generation, with us being on Instagram all the time and shorter attention spans, that we have to make adjustments to our sport to make it quicker, to make it more exciting, to have more fan involvement, whether it's, you know, noise between points, you know, stuff like that. Is there anything like that that you've thought about to maybe help, you know, an 8-year-old be excited about coming to a tennis match?
It's one thing that I'm talking about 2-3 years. That I would say also to the ATP that for me has to change for sure is that the people has to move and make noise at least on the lateral side. Because like you say, for who is playing behind is really tough because you have to watch the serve and all these things. But on the lateral side, you cannot ask to a guy that is coming 15 years old, yep, is watching exactly. The telephone, is send a message. You cannot say that they cannot speak for 2-3 hours. That's impossible. And also for the new generation, if you start with all the noise and this, after 2-3 years, you're not even thinking about this. Mm-hmm. So I think this is very important also for the fan. Maybe they want to scream, they want to do a lot of things, and they cannot even, I don't know, take some chips or take a Coke during the match. So that's impossible. I think you have to go forward on this side for sure.
If you were to point to one match in your career that said that's the prototypical Paolo Lorenzi match, do you have one that really sticks out in your mind or maybe the most memorable match in your career?
Of course, if I think about one match, is the semifinals in Kitzbühel when I won the tournament, because it was a really strange match. I played against Gerald Meltzer. I won 7-6, 7-6. But if you think in this match, first set, I was 5-3, 40 love down. And I won the set 7-6. Mm. In the second set, he had, I think, 9 set points and I had 12 match points. So this is like I was my matches, because at the end of the match, I didn't know how many match points I had. I don't know how many set points he had. I was just playing every point. I was the last one. So I think this is a good match for see how I was on court.
I mean, speaking about the U.S. Open, you know, watching you against Zachary Svida, you know, an up-and-coming player, probably somebody you've never heard of prior to that, or maybe you had to look up matches of him in, you know, some of the national tournaments here. You were down 2-0, and you're playing this young kid, excited to be out there, and people are, like, texting me, and they're like, well, Paolo looks a little tired, you know, this. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You know, maybe the battery was put in wrong, and we're just going to have to switch the battery. I'm telling you, just wait. And I'm, you know, I wasn't saying that it was 100% you were going to win that match. I just said there was more left in you in that match than people knew. And then boom, you know, Lorenzi does Lorenzi things and he's out there. And I think looking at those matches, again, playing such a young player, you being the person you are and being on tour, you just play your tennis. You don't even second guess that. And I think for me, looking at those matches, those are the ones that I think that's Paolo. That's who he is. He's going to put all out there. He doesn't care if he's won 4 points that match. He's going to come out and he's going to come back in that match. So looking at that, those are the things that I think people will remember about you and be like, you know, how do you not respect this guy? You know?
No, no, that's true. The match I remember a lot because at the end of the match, many of them, they asked me, how you were two sets down? This guy is 17, 16 years old and you were top 50, had no points. I say, during the match, I was not even thinking about this. I was just trying to win the match. I was trying to play high ball. I was trying to play slice. I was trying to go to the net. I don't care if that guy was, I don't know, Roger or him or you. I was just trying a way to win that match. And that was my characteristic of every match that I was trying to do. Of course, I had my bad day. I lost. If I think about some matches, I would like to do better. But that's what I'm thinking, to give 100% every time.
Paolo, I read that you're going to be doing some broadcasting, my friend. And how can I dissuade you from getting into this world? Because I don't think I don't think the world's ready for Paolo Lorenzi on commentary.
I have a lot of passion for tennis, so that's what I like to bring. But now I have to speak with you guys a lot, so you can give me some advice about this.
I don't like complimenting Mike, and it took him a while, but his voice is prepared, you know, and just deep. And I listen to it before I go to sleep at night. That's how great it is. But so where is this broadcasting happening? Where are you doing this?
Mike, you cannot imagine how many, of course, I'm studying every player before I'm playing a match. Every player. So every time I have his voice. Okay, this player, he made this and this and this. I heard him, I don't know, thousands of matches.
Where are you doing this broadcasting or commentary? Do you know where you're going to do it yet? Or
I made Wimbledon this year. So I really enjoyed it because I was on site. So I had time to watch the matches, to speak about the matches. I had some interview with Novak, with Roger, with some Italians. So it was really good. Then I work for Sky Italy. So I will do the Turin, the ATP finals. I made also something about in Rome. So I'm really enjoying. Like right now, I made just 2-3 weeks a year. So I cannot say that this is a job, but I love it.
All right. So if the Sarasota Challenger happens next year in 2021, Paolo, will you like go out and play and see if maybe he can get 3 wins? Or are you going to join me on commentary?
No, of course. First of all, I'm trying to practice 1 month before and try to beat Ramirez Hidalgo.
And then, yeah.
And then when I have some time free, maybe I'm trying to join you a little bit on your side.
All right. So go ahead.
I just want to know when Paolo is going to try. I need 1 week with Paolo. You're coming with me. We're going to do 1 week. I'm going to get ready. We play what it may be, like Rome or something. And then people are going to be so flustered. Noah Rubin and Paolo Lorenzi. That's the team. Then nobody said, that's it. I title easily now.
Of course, we have to do this. I would love to do this.
Okay.
The only problem that I have is that I love food. So we need to switch from American food to some Italian or nice.
Fine.
Food.
I think
let's do it.
Fine.
Yeah. Listen, Noah is quite a snob when it comes to food. So I think you guys will fit in very well. I have to say, Paolo,
so I'm ready.
I think about you and like Noah and I have obviously had a lot of great talks about him and enjoying the sport. And I've always kind of looked to you as a role model for so many players because of the fact that you have such an incredible passion for the sport. And I think you being a broadcaster will be a fantastic thing because you do have the joy for the sport. And I think that is going to be a big, big thing for us, especially here in the U.S. where we're trying to continue to grow the sport again. I think that's going to be really crucial. And I just want you to be able to spread that message as much as possible over the next few years, because I think, like you said, it's really crucial right now, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. Thanks a lot for your words. But I think that the best thing that we can do is to share our passion. Of course, tennis needs this. Of course, we have now in Italy that the tennis is going up. Everyone wants to play tennis. Maybe in the States, you need some help in this moment. I hope that you will have some other big players. Now we have Sebi Korda. We have a lot of these. But if I can only help just a little bit, this sport that give me 40 years of fun. I'm just happy.
Well, Paolo, on behalf of all the tennis players, I can definitely tell you we appreciated more than ever having you around, seeing you at tournaments, and you've done more for tennis than you know. I promise you that. So anything you do now is just a bonus, but you are an amazing contribution to tennis, and we thank you. And I don't care what Mike says after that. So, but thank you so much again.
Thank you,
we
Paolo.
Are so excited to have you on, and best of luck with every step of your next journey.
Thanks really a lot, and I hope to have another podcast with you one time, because I really enjoyed, and I cannot retire anymore, but I hope that you will call me again.
I think we will. All right, take care, Paolo.
Ciao.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.